This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Our signature sponsor is First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Please send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is our producer, and in a moment, we're going to hear from the former Metro Councilwoman Tara Wicker. Tara Wicker was representing our city for a dozen years at the council level, and she's here today in another capacity. She's become a anti-abortion activist and has a story that includes an abortion in her past when she was 16 years old. Before we get there, it's worthy of noting that Tina Turner, the earth-shaking singer whose rasping vocals, sexual magnetism, and explosive energy made her an unforgettable live performer, one of the most successful recording artists of all time, died Wednesday in Switzerland near Zurich. She was 83 years old. She had been fighting illnesses in recent years, including kidney disease, cancer, and had a stroke. Ms. Turner, as the New York Times notes today, embarked on her half-century career in the late 1950s, still attending high school when she began singing with the Ike Turner Review and his band, the Kings of Rhythm. At first, she was only an occasional performer, but she soon became the group's star attraction. And Tina Turner's life, of course, was tortured in her union with Ike. With her patented bluesy voice and her frenetic dancing style, she made a worldwide impression that continued for decades. She passed away yesterday, 83 years old. And for those who remember, she became a chart topper in the 1980s. And here is one of her memorable selections. Simply the best, and that she was, and was known appropriately as the Queen of Rock and Roll, and is one of the few people to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice as a member of the Ike and Tina Turner Review, but also as a single artist. I remember when Ike Turner died, a man who brutally abused her, and she was a survivor. When he died, I believe it was the Times-Picayune had the headline, one of the most memorable ones that probably would not be used today, but it said, Ike beats Tina to death. And that he almost did, literally. But she did survive for 83 years and left an indelible impression on our culture. And in studio is somebody who's here to talk about a serious matter. But before we get there, Tara Wicker, I'm sure you grew up listening to Tina Turner, as I did.
We did. And, you know, my husband and I were looking at her on television last night. It's just incredible how she stayed in such remarkable shape. And he said, you know, how she danced across that stage. She didn't really have a choice. I don't think I ever saw her perform without sweating. So she was in impeccable shape.
I think she dominated the stage like nobody else, and what an amazing performer, in addition to obviously having skills that were remarkable as a vocalist and as a dancer. She was a captivating presence and will never be forgotten by those of us who saw her in her prime. Mm-hmm. Now back to the serious topic of abortion. In South Carolina, a controversial six-week abortion ban is headed to the Governor Henry McMaster's desk to be signed into law. It cleared the legislature in the Palmetto State this week. The state Senate approved it, and it was a 27-19 vote. Senate Bill 474, known as the Fetal Heartbeat and Protection from Abortion Act, would ban most abortions after early cardiac activity can be detected in a fetus or embryo, commonly as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy, before many women even know they're pregnant. So we have this move, particularly in the South, to ban abortion as much as is possible with these electors, of course, these legislators being they have to pay attention to the electorate, and the electorate, as we know, is mixed on this. Even in Louisiana, a recent poll showed 53% of those in our state favor abortion rights, and we live in a conservative state. But Tara Wicker has taken the mantle as a Democrat, as a minority, as a pro-life advocate, and she speaks from experience. She's not only the mother of six children. She had an abortion when she was 16 years old and believes it was the wrong thing to do. Now, before we get into why you believe it was wrong and would discourage others from having an abortion, why do you think the laws are the way to approach it? Should we appeal to people's hearts or to have laws that ban abortion and make it impossible to get one in Louisiana?
I think it needs to be, you know, a combination of both. I think that whenever you're talking about policy, you know, as a former policymaker, you know, you have to be able to look at the backdrop of why we do policies in the first place. You know, protecting the health, the safety, and the welfare of the citizens that we, you know, are elected to serve. And when it comes down to the protection of life, human life, you know, nothing goes to the core than it does the life of an innocent baby. And having an understanding of the power and the impact that not allowing those babies' voices to be heard and not seeing them as human beings is something that I think that as protectors, we have to make sure that their voices are heard and they're protected. They're human beings.
Well, even in South Carolina, Tara Wicker, they do have a rape and incest exception in this bill. In Louisiana, we voted that down. No rape, no incest exception. Governor John Bel Edwards was an advocate, but didn't even make it out of committee. Would that have been a prudent thing to do, or were you against that as well?
I was definitely against rape and incest exceptions, because at what point do you draw the line of the value of a person's life? Well, because you were conceived and raped, then your life is not valuable. And I've met several individuals personally who were conceived through rape and incest, and just the idea of us saying, well, you know, because you were the victim of a rape situation, your life really doesn't have any value. And so I personally have a problem with us drawing the line in terms of people's lives that we value mm-hmm. versus others.
But the person who has to carry that child, if it's from a product of rape or incest, they have value, and they may be affected immensely by having to carry a child to term and perhaps raising the child. Is there any way we can address them if they don't want to
have
a baby under those circumstances?
I think most definitely. I think that part of the process of what we should be doing is having conversations about support and rallying around those situations. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, we cannot punish the child for the crimes of their fathers. And so that in that case, we want to make sure that those moms, anytime that there's rape or incest situation, those are horrible, horrific situations that are happening to women. And I think that what we have to be able to do is be available to make sure that we support that mom, support that baby, make sure she has all the access to resources and everything that she needs to make sure that she's cared for and taken care of. And at the end of the day, that the baby has an opportunity to live, because the baby didn't commit mm-hmm. the crime.
You had an abortion when you were 16 years old, and you have bravely come forward to talk about that. Not many would. There's still a stigma in doing that. And of course, I doubt that it was a cavalier decision. You told me your mother went with you to the mm-hmm. clinic on Acadian Thruway. Could you tell us what led up to making that decision to end a pregnancy, and how far along were you when it happened?
So, what led up to it was, you know, 16 years old. My sister had a baby at 19. My mom was raising us as a single mom. And at that moment in time, her life, my life, it seemed to be just, what are we gonna do in this moment? And she presented me with that. She said, well, don't worry about it. We're gonna take care of it. Now, as a 16-year-old, I, at that moment, didn't even know or understand what that meant. And before I knew it, we were driving up on the lot of the abortion clinic to take care of it. I just remember, Jim, at that moment being very, very silent. I don't remember having a voice. I didn't have any options that were before me. It was presented as a problem. And at that moment in time, in her mm-hmm. space, the only solution was, well, let's go ahead and we'll take care of this situation. Nobody prepared me for that. Nobody prepared me for the 30 years of what would happen in my life, the changing in my personality, the horrific drama that happened on the other side of those doors of the abortion clinic. And that's why I'm speaking today to young ladies.
877-217-5757. We'll return with Tara Wicker after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, and we're discussing the sensitive issue of abortion, and there are people of good faith on each side of this issue. And it is rare that we have somebody who's had an abortion who will come forward and talk about it, but Tara Wicker, the former Metro Councilwoman of 12 years, is doing just that. And she believes that it was not a productive experience in her life and wishes she had not made that choice. When she was 16, her mother took her to the clinic on Acadian Thruway. And I know Dr. Dorsey Bryant presided there for many years. He also delivered babies. I'm sure you know him well.
Yeah, he delivered me. He was the same doctor that delivered me, was the same doctor that, you know, perform the abortion on my baby.
877-217-5757. And as mentioned, this is a sensitive topic, and there's nothing to be gained by attacking the guest. And you can hear she is a person of good faith, and her position on this issue may differ from many of us, but I think it is a position that is worthy of being expressed, and that's why she's here. Sharon and Zachary, we'll start with you. Sharon, you're on Talk Louisiana with Councilwoman Wicker. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I just have a question. I do understand her conscience and everything, but as a child of 6'10", who has, you know, been in raped, how could you want that child to carry that baby, and knowing that it could possibly ruin her life and not be able to even carry a child when she's an adult, because more than likely she won't be able to, because it will physically ruin her. I mean, why would you want, and I mean, it's double torture.
Thank you, Sharon. Tara?
I'd love to respond to that. And again, just my heartfelt to any woman that has had to endure the pain and suffering of a rape situation. I think that I have to look at it on the other side in terms of, because what was said was the possibility of her having to raise that child and go through that and not have to have, not be able to have additional children. And there's so many stories that are out there that are to the opposite. And one of the things that we found is that when, as horrific as those situations are, we never have the conversation about the value of adoption. We never have the conversation about the value of being able to give alternatives. Yes, it's a horrific situation, but I think at the same time, we cannot devalue the value of that baby's life. That is a living human being. And so the truth of the matter is no matter the situation surrounding, the circumstances surrounding a person's conception, it should not devalue their life as a human mm-hmm. being.
Do your religious beliefs, do they influence your thinking on this?
I think it's a totality. Obviously, I'm a woman of faith. I do believe what the Bible says. I think that God is the creator of life. And I do believe that, that there's value, that God is pro-life. But in addition to that, and I'll just go here, you know, because a lot of times I hear people talk about, well, it's my right, or I should have a right. And, you know, and we've talked about this before. At one point in history, I don't understand, when do we think that it should be a right for us to have the opportunity to murder another human being, an innocent life? And at one point in history, as an African-American woman, I take it very personally, because mm-hmm. in history, at one point in time, there was a sector of our community that believed that an African-American's life, because we were considered property, either had value or not. And so at that point, that for me becomes very, very personal about just the personhood. It took a literal constitution, a part of the Constitution mm-hmm. coming into play for African-Americans right. to even be considered human. So that's a problem for me.
Approximately how far along were you when you had your abortion?
I think I was about, if I can remember, Jim, this is the first time I've ever been asked that question. Let me think. So February, March, April, almost 2 months.
2 months.
Yeah.
Is there a distinction between 1 month, 2 months, 5 months, conception? Or do you believe that once life begins, that we as earthlings have no reason to stop it, based on the fact that you view that as a human life from the start? Is that your point of view?
Yeah. I mean, at what point do you determine that that's not a human being? Each and every one of us starts at that point, and we grow. All of us are human. That's how human beings are formed. And, you know, so the question is, Is it at 2 months? Is it at 3 months? Is it, like in New York, right at birth?
Not accurate.
Okay.
No. There's no place in the United States where abortion is legal at birth. Now, sometimes doctors do have decisions to make if they're trying to save the life of a mother, or if the fetus is not viable to live, then decisions may be made, but some of us believe that that's better decided by a doctor than by a person who's a lawmaker. But I admire you for coming forward, and you're sincere. And as I stated before, I think your point of view is worthy of hearing by our audience, and that's why you're here. And let's try to get to as many of you as possible. I do ask that you keep your marks brief and keep them civil. Lorraine on I-10. Lorraine, you're on with Tara Wicker. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi. It always comes down to, when does life begin? And you have a fully formed human being whose life may be at risk. You can have a co-fetus whose life may be at risk. And these are the real complicated cases. And so it all boils down to your religion, your faith. I'm sorry that Tara didn't have the opportunity. She had no choice. She was not given the choice to counsel with a doctor before having an abortion. That's really not having a choice.
All right. Was there any counseling? Was there any discussion, or did you just walk in and the procedure was done?
No, there was no counseling. There was no conversation. The only thing that was done to me, and it goes back to talking about when does life begin. My experience was, the abortion happened. The doctor left out. I was in the room alone on the table. I look to the right and I look at my baby in a glass jar. So there was no, you know, so no one can tell me that that's not a baby. I'm looking at my baby in that jar.
At 2 months, what did you see?
I saw the formation. I can show you the picture. I have a young lady brought me a picture of her sonogram the other day. She's about 2 months, and I looked at it. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, mm-hmm. and I saw the formation of what I knew was forming of a baby.
All right, Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Kevin, you're on with Tara Wicker.
Yes, the Bible says, do not judge or you will be judged. And another thing, why do people from Europe and the British come telling people how to live their life when they were the last people to be humanized?
All right, well, abortion, by the way, is widely legal in Europe. It's not in the United States, and I'm sure it has to do with our religious heritage here. But we do subscribe to separation of church and state, and I understand what you're saying, Tara, as far as you believe this was a terrible mistake for you personally, but not everybody believes as you do. So why should you have the right, if you will, to impose your viewpoint on this on other people?
I just don't think people should have the right to kill another human being, an innocent human being. I'm not sure where in our psyche we think that that's okay to murder another human being. And no matter how we deal it up, you know, and there are states, Jim, that allow abortion up to term. So, you know, at what point do you make a decision, whether it's inconvenience, whether it's what may happen? And just by the way, there are provisions that allow, in the case of the life of the mother, where those are allowed, you know, that mothers are considered taken care of. But I firmly believe that no one should have a right to murder another human being. At what point do we draw the line? We have one of the highest murder rates. Okay.
Okay. We do have to take a break, and we'll spend a few more minutes with Tara Wicker, and then we'll hear from Andre Morrow. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're going to take a few more calls for Tara Wicker, and then we'll go to Andre Morrow. But please be brief and be kind to Tara, who is a mother of six. But at 16 years old, she did have an abortion, and she doesn't believe that she made the right choice and doesn't want others to make the choice that she made. She believes that it should be outlawed, not only in Louisiana, but I suspect that you would prefer it to be outlawed all over the country.
I do. I just believe that again, we should not have the provision or the opportunity to make a determination of the value of a person's life and decide to end a person's life.
Rose on government. Rose, you're on the air. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning, Jim. Why do we keep talking about the women and we don't talk about what the men do? I'm a child of incest. If I had gotten a child, being a child of incest, it probably wouldn't have turned out right. And I think we should give women the choice to control their own bodies.
All right. That's an argument that I'm sure you hear frequently.
Yeah. You know, and again, I'm so sorry that has happened. But I do, and I agree with her that, you know, the men that are, committing these crimes, we're not sentencing them to death. They're not even dealt with. There's no laws or policies to say that if you rape or you incest, you victimize a person in that way, that you should be put to death. So the struggle for me is that we are continually, making the children victimized of the crimes of their dads, and that's just not right. So I agree with her on that.
All right, Brennan on 100 Oaks. Brennan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to speak to the guest's comments about supporting women. I feel like in a state where we have some of the highest maternal and infant mortality, and couldn't even listen to a paid family leave this legislative session, the paid family leave bill, I feel like we're just not offering that support. So I feel like in a state where we're doing so horribly on those metrics that, you know, we need to address that.
I totally agree. We, that's one of the reasons why, you know, with Louisiana Black Advocates for Life and Louisiana Right to Life, we're out in the community having conversations about, you know, not only making sure that babies have an opportunity to live, but what happens once they're here. And so the disparity in terms of healthcare outcomes and birth outcomes is something that we need to be able to definitely address. I think if we're going to rally around anything, we would do diaper drives and formula drives, and everybody on both sides of the table will come together in support of those kinds of initiatives. And I think that's where the energy needs to be focused. Let's make sure that moms and babies mm-hmm. are taken care of and are have resources that are available, but allow that baby the opportunity to live.
Morgan in Gardere, you're on Talk Louisiana with Tara Wicker. Morgan.
Yes, I just wanted to first express my sympathies to Tara that you were not given the opportunity to make that choice for yourself. I imagine that it has something to do with you being a child and therefore the parent made that decision for you, which I do not agree with. Two questions. If we should have the opportunity, we should not have the opportunity to judge the value of a person's life, how do we reconcile the choice to end a pregnancy that could lend to the death of the gestational parent? Is that still in the same case, choosing one life over another? And if not, then how do we reconcile one life over another? Is it the choice between that gestational parent and their doctor? Does the fetus get a choice?
Great question. Great question. As I mentioned before, there are provisions in law now that take into consideration the life of the mother. So if there's a risk of the life of the mother and it's determined that as the pregnancy progresses that she's going to die, that's a conversation between her and her doctor. And they are able by law now to make that determination that in the case of the life of the mother. So in addition to that, we know that there's so many cases where mm-hmm. there was a consideration that the baby may or may not survive and that kind of thing. And they were allowed to have those babies, or they had those babies, and now the babies are doing wonderful and doing absolutely great, when at first it was said, oh, well, this is going to turn out absolutely terrible. So I think at some point in time, there needs to be that determination if there is a definite case that the doctor, two doctors provide that is in the case of the death of a mom, that's the decision that's made. But at the same time, when it comes down to just the value in the life of that baby's life has to be considered as valued because we have so many that have overcome those odds.
James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Tara.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Twice your guest has mentioned we need to take care of the mother and the baby. You know, and a lot of these pro-life groups, they talk about that, taking care of the mother and the baby. We have free diapers and baby formula. Doesn't mention food. And, oh, by the way, that's thousands of dollars more. According to the government, the cost of raising a child from birth to death in the United States is over $230,000. Is your group prepared to support all these women and babies who have to force into birth?
I never would understand the comment that it's better to be dead than poor. So if you're trying to value or put an economic value on a person's life to say, well, if you can't be taken care of, you're better off dead. My mind can't wrap around that. And so do we need to take care of the economics of Louisiana citizens and make sure that people have access and viable access to the opportunity to take care of themselves and their family in a real way? Most definitely. But the offside of that is not, well, if you can't economically afford to educate and raise a child, then it's better off for that child to be dead. When does that come into play? That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
And a listener notes that New York Attorney General Letitia James, who's long been outspoken about defending abortion rights, has acknowledged that she had an abortion. And I have seen information that as many as 30% of the American women of childbirth age have had abortions. And this is getting harder to track because of the pharmaceutical availability now to end a pregnancy without a procedure. Are you against pills that the so-called morning after pill, anything that would stop a potential pregnancy from evolving into a child?
Yeah, Jim. I mean, again, outside of just the human life aspect, there are so many dynamics when you have a young girl or a woman getting these mail order abortion pills and they take the pill, they're at home. It's no doctor's care. There's no oversight. And we've had so many stories of women that have, you know, bled to death and all of those kinds of things that happen as a result of them not having access to care. And these pharmaceutical companies are literally mailing them to their homes and saying, oh, by the way, just take this pill and your problem that you're perceiving as a problem is going to be solved. So that's another healthcare issue that we've got to deal with as well.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, please be concise. You're on.
Thank you, Jim, Tara, and the audience. Good morning. Thank you. Mrs. Wicker, what about giving males vasectomies? If it's proven that a vasectomy can be readily reversed and they can be viable, once a male becomes responsible, financially able to care for a child and what have you, since males are out here impregnating females.
What about mandatory vasectomies?
mandatory vasectomies for, at what point do you draw the line? You've got to have a vasectomy.
It would stop abortion.
If you stop people from having babies?
Well, you can have them reversed, though. Stuart's correct. Vasectomies now are reversible, so you could wait until they're married or whatever. I mean, it's something that is not going to fly, Stuart. I'm sorry. It's not going to work, but it is a thought-provoking subject. David in Atlanta, final caller for Tara Wicker. Hi, David.
Given that a nationwide abortion would exist, as your guest supports, if you had a daughter who came to you and she said, I wasn't as careful as I should have been on my prom night, I've been saving babysitting money, and I'm going to go to a back alley abortion clinic to get this baby aborted, would you help her leave the country and get a safe clinical abortion?
What about that?
Absolutely not. I would love my daughter. I would support her. I would wrap my arms around her. I said, I know this is traumatic, but we're going to get through this, and we're going to get through it together. You're not going to traumatize yourself even more. We forget that rape and incest or babies that are unplanned is a trauma in some instances, mm-hmm. but going on top of that and adding abortion as an additional trauma doesn't solve the problem.
Thank you, Tara Wicker, for bravely sharing your story. And now we're joined by Andre Morrow, who will soon be leaving the broadcast desk. He's been in many places in his career, including two stints at WAFB. But tomorrow night's his final show of Louisiana Public Broadcasting's The State We're In, 6 years now at LPB's The State We're In, and almost 40 years as a television personality, and not many people walk away from the bright lights of television. You are a local celebrity. Is it a tough decision?
No, it was time to do it, and there are many other things I'm going to do, some of which I'm learning, but some business opportunities that will be on my own schedule, and I think it will work out well.
Well, as mentioned, you graduated from LSU. Of course, you grew up here, too, mm-hmm. And it's from a legendary Louisiana family. His brother was an All-American. Yes, Doug Morrow was an All-American wide receiver.
And then played for the Dolphins.
And 4 years with the Miami Dolphins as well. And his father was one of the most decorated coaches in the history of LSU, Al Morrow.
And world record holder in the high hurdles.
Yes, world record holder. Yes.
Yeah.
As in number one all time at that time. And you were born when he was already a seasoned citizen. How old was your dad when you were born?
He was 47, almost 48. My mother was 44, almost 45.
And in those days, that was like 58 and 54. But they did it, and Andre is one of the most fit 65-year-old men on the planet. And we'll return with him after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Andre Morrow is in the house, and tomorrow night's his final State We're In telecast on LPB. And if you'd like to get in under the wire with him, he'll still be part of the community, and I'm sure we'll hear from Andre every now and then. Your number's 877-217-5757, but he and I went to school at LSU at the same time. I'm sure had some classes together, and he did well. I know, just to kind of get to where you are now, when you got out of school, though, you went to work, if I remember right, at Tulane University, didn't you?
Well, the interesting thing, my last year of college, I took my final course, correspondence. I had the chance to go to New York and attempt to model, which I did, but they wanted me to do more commercial than high fashion. I looked like I was 12 years old, probably. And so I did that for 8 months and then came back, graduated, went through graduation, and then actually went to work for my brother-in-law. And I actually started the Louisiana Sportsman, if you know what that paper is.
Yeah, I know. Giant, it's still around. Yeah,
it's huge. He hired me to start that. I did for 9 months. Then I worked for Tulane as a fundraiser, going around the country identifying major gift donors and having lunch, meeting with them. I met with Lindy Boggs in her office one time. We looked at the roles. She was telling me people who had money. So I did that for 3 years, then got into television after that, and that's the end of it.
And your first job wasn't in New York or even Baton Rouge. It was where?
It was in Alexandria. And the funny thing is, Tulane had already decided to move me out to the West Coast and open up a satellite office in Marina Del Rey. So 3 weeks before that would have happened, Alexandria called. And so instead of Marina Del Rey, I went to Pineville, Alexandria. Worked there 80 days, then went to Lafayette, then Baton Rouge, and then Columbus, Detroit, Los Angeles, San Diego, and back here.
877-217-5757 is your number. Andre Morrow in-house, and listeners note that he had not one, but two stints at WAFB. First time you were doing sports?
Yep.
Second time you were anchoring the 6 and 10 news?
Right, sure was. Sure was. I called me and asked me to come back, as a matter of fact. Nick Simonette did out of the
and you were working at the time in
San Diego.
Yeah, you'd been in Los Angeles though. The number two market in San Diego is a huge market as well.
Yeah.
So why did you come back?
Well, the offer was great, and so I did, and it wound up being great with family. And my mother was 5 years at the time shy of being 100. She lived to 100, so it was good to experience all of that and to be here for that, and so. Now it's a different part of my life, and I have the opportunity to do some things that I'd like to do while I can still move around a little bit.
Yeah, I'm fascinated often by people who move from town to town, like your predecessor, George Sells, who worked in huge markets and then ended up spending a good portion of his life in Baton Rouge. He'd been here since 88, so that's 35 years. That's almost half his life. Now,
He's doing great. He looks great.
He's still following the news, too.
Oh, yes. I love George.
But you went first from Baton Rouge to Columbus, Ohio, didn't you?
Yes. Columbus, fantastic city, for one thing. It's a huge
city. And a lot
city.
Like Baton Rouge. Bigger version.
A lot like Baton Rouge, but four times as big. And much more progressive, and along with everything. They have highways and roads, and they have things to get around. And it's a great, great city. It's growing at a clip as fast as Austin, Texas right now, by the way. So Columbus continues to explode and be popular. Lived there 4 years, loved it, was offered a job in Detroit. My salary doubled, and then was there a year, then had the chance to go to Los Angeles, went there, then San Diego, and then just because.
So you were in California a long time.
Yeah, 10 years. Loved it. Man, loved it. The weather was phenomenal. I've never gotten used to humidity. Again. Yeah.
Well, tonight you'll be, I guess, putting the finishing touches on the show that airs tomorrow and re-airs on Sunday and, of course, is available online. But I know you want to go out with a flourish. Well, what are the subjects on the state we're in?
Well, we're going to do a recap of my career that was submitted by LPB to the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters, and it earned me a Lifetime Achievement Award
this year.
So
congratulations.
We're gonna show that, and it from the start until the finish, it shows my career, each place I've been, briefly, because you know, but some high points of it. I'm also working on a story for tomorrow night on LED lighting for the downtown Baton Rouge Mississippi River Bridge. If you Google LED bridge lights, you'll be stunned at how prolific they are in the world. And they are showpieces. They are tourist attractions. You will go there just to look at what the bridge can do. Look up the Montreal
Well, and our bridge is situated where it stands out begin with. You can imagine how majestic it would look with some nice lighting.
And they're getting ready to light the downtown New Orleans bridge, which is has two bridges actually for one. And so that's been decided. They're working on that. I talked with Walt Leger this morning. There's a coalition in Baton Rouge that would love for this to happen, and so they need to get on board with DOTD, which is funding some of this for the New Orleans Bridge. So to me, it would only make sense, well, if you're doing it for them, why not for Baton Rouge?
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
That's a good idea.
But there's a it would be a change maker if Baton Rouge's bridge was like this, and it's hard to know or even imagine what these bridges can do, but they are spectacular. And Shreveport's ahead of the curve. They already have one.
And a listener notes, this is Carolyn noting that you've been involved with the Red Stick Revelry, the New Year's Eve thing. Well, is that going to continue?
I did that from the beginning. Likely so. Rana Gray is the one who founded that. Yeah. We've done that for 10 years and celebrated.
And by the way, I saw photos of you and Rana down in New Orleans hobnobbing with Laura Dern and Diane Ladd.
Well, we listened to them. They just wrote a book, which is also something I have an interest in. It's so important to pass on family histories and traditions and to have that on video and on something that you can treasure and keep. I think it's the most important things. I can't imagine not knowing the stories that will get lost and forgotten if they're not told in some form. So I'm looking at that also as something that I might consider doing.
And another listener noted that I mentioned you've always been in tip-top shape. And this is a good question. Did you ever have consultants actually recommending that anchors stay in good physical condition? Because it's obviously a visual medium, or you just did it on your own?
No, I just did it on my own. And I do it on my Instagram page, which has about 140,000 followers right now. And so I do it for fit over 50, fit over 60. I've had a lot of surgeries on my joints, on knees, on shoulders, et cetera. Some wear and tear, some injuries. But you can exercise and work out in such a way that you are assured not to get hurt. I don't ever plan to get injured or have an operation again.
Well, and now you may have a bit more time to do that. But but your dad, as mentioned, was a world champion hurdler, world record hurdler, and then an amazing coach. And a few years ago, they were going to name the field in his honor, right?
Absolutely.
And what happened with that?
Well, what happened with that is that there had been some discussion, and I'm told by people it was a done deal. It had just not been announced yet. And then, for no money, and then the then athletic director at the time, Joe Oliva, got wind that maybe this can be something we can sell. So he called our family up to a meeting at a suite in Tiger Stadium and said, we would love to name the track Al Morrow Track at Bernie Moore Stadium for $2.5 million. My sister Michelle said, Dad would think we were crazy if we were here right now. And all of us just looked at each other and said, thank you. And we walked out. That was the end of the conversation. Rana Gray, though, pointed out to me, because she was a longtime LSU athletic department worker.
Not at this time, though. Not when.
No. This is just
previously.
Afterwards.
Previously.
As a friend, she said, you know, if that decision was made, then they went through a lot of looking to decide that they wanted that. They just made the mistake, well, for us, of adding on the money at the end. So
$2.5 million, and we'll put your dad's name on the field, and that's.
It's similar to making Dale Brown pay for the court being in his name. And of course, that's a whole other story. I love Dale Brown. I support him. And I don't think he should share the court's name with anyone. But he was never going to pay for it, even though he had people who were stepping forward. And of course, we weren't in a position for that. And Dad wasn't around anymore, of course. But
well, I think that may be one of the biggest changes, maybe the biggest in our time and covering sports in particular, is it's now big business.
Oh my gosh, but the NIL, I can't even imagine the NIL deals and the young LSU gymnast who makes millions from her endorsements
she's
and Instagram
higher paid
and everything.
Probably than Brian Kelly.
I'm sure.
And Angel Reese is not far behind. I bet she's going to make more than Kim Mulkey in the next year.
Yeah, isn't that
and
amazing?
And tomorrow they go to the White House. They're in Washington today. And Collis Temple, the board member who did not attend any games, is going to show his support. And God bless Collis. It's great that LSU won a national title.
Yeah.
It's great that you're still going to be around. And LPB's, the state we're in, will remain a staple, but Andre will be missed. He is a rare talent. Thank you for joining us.
I may be in it now and then, but I'm done regularly.
And you'll have an invitation to come back here every now
thank
and
you,
then.
Thank you, Jim. I'd love to. You're a great guy, man.
Thank you. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. For Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.